This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Look around the crowd at any Red Wings game. You'll see plenty of fans paying tribute to my next guest by wearing the number 24 jersey, even though it's been more than 5 years since this Hall of Famer skated for the Wings. No less an authority than Red Wings head coach Mike Babcock calls him the greatest American player of all time. Well, now we find out what his storied career was like from the inside, from number 24 himself. Chris Chelios' memoir is titled Made in America. Chris Chelios, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you.
Good to have you with us. So 26 seasons in the NHL, you're tied with Gordie Howe, you've got three Stanley Cups, Hockey Hall of Fame, and it all started for you at a really young age, it seems, growing up on Chicago's South Side. Do you remember your first time on the ice?
Yeah, I mean, it was in a park out about two blocks away from my house, a city called Evergreen Park, just on the border of Chicago in the suburbs. But, yeah, you don't forget those days, and it's not like I grew up wanting to be a pro hockey player. I just played hockey because I loved it, and things actually worked out, so...
To say the least. You share with us a story from your Pee Wee hockey days, and... As a parent, I read it twice to see if I read it right, about how your dad, Gus, reacted when you weren't playing as well as you had been playing. And I think of how so many parents today are cheerleaders for their kids. They're focusing on the good stuff. They want to smooth over the bumps. Gus Chelios certainly took a different tack. Tell us what he said to you.
He had a lot of passion, whether it was on the ice, when I was on the ice, or I was working for him in the restaurant. So I'm going to be nice to my dad because he's still around to read the book and hear it. But he, you know, my whole thing, he wanted me to have a great work ethic. And that was pretty much what he was trying to get across to me, whether it was, you know, for sports or school or anything I decided I was going to do. So that's pretty much what he instilled in me from an early age.
He asked you, do you like hockey? And you said, yes, I like it. I like it very much. And then Gus says, then I'm going to be with you all the time telling you not the good things you do, but rather the bad things you do. And I thought, that's tough love.
Yeah, he was hard on me. And like I said, it taught me, you know, now that I have kids and they all played hockey or sports. And, you know, I try to approach it a different way than my father. Things are different now, obviously, than they were 30 years ago raising a kid. You got to be a little more sensitive, and it's just a different time. So for the most part, I think it helped me raise my kids and deal with, you know, when they had problems or, you know, when you wanted them to learn lessons. And I hope the book comes across for kids a little bit, and the fact that you do face adversity, you know, growing up, whether it's sports, school, anything. You know, you try to rise above it and get through it.
Yeah, well, he helped you, probably helped you toughen that hide, so it was there when you got to the NHL. He moved with your moved your family from Chicago to the San Diego area in search of better restaurant opportunities, and certainly he, you know, you were expected to pitch in and help with the family restaurant. At what point did you decide that, you know, working in the restaurant was not what you wanted in life?
You know what? I was actually going to college in San Diego at the time. I had to work for my father, you know, to help him out to make ends meet, basically. We weren't doing that great. That's why we moved to California to start a new business. But ultimately, what my dad did tell me was make sure you go to college, get your degree, so you don't end up working in the bar or restaurant the rest of your life like I am. And, you know, not that it didn't give us a good living. There were some good times and bad times. But, you know, it stuck in my mind, and for sure, I didn't want to end up in the kitchen for the rest of my life or managing a restaurant. But somehow I managed to get back to it. It's just a Greek thing, you know, having the place in Detroit. But like you said, I learned a lot of tough love. But at the end, you know, it all worked out, you know, for a reason.
Well, there you were in California in the late 1970s. And as you tell us in your book, the NHL was basically Canadian then. Americans had such a minor presence. And as you put, scouts and college recruiters weren't thinking of San Diego for prospects. You looked for vacation homes in California. You didn't look for hockey players. How did you make it from, you know, the beaches of San Diego to wind up on NHL ice?
Yeah, well, it's in the book, and honestly, it's just a fluke, right place at the right time. Ran into a kid that I had tried out with in San Diego for the college team, and I'd gotten cut. And a month later, just they were on the beach training. I went to say hi to him. He asked me where I was playing, and at that point, I was done playing, just going to school and working. He gave me the phone number of the coach in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, Larry Billows, made the call, and the rest is history. So, like I said, there's something to be said for timing and, you know, being in the right place at the right time.
And having the talent, because you did make it to the NHL, played for Montreal, then back home to Chicago until that 98-99 season, and then here to Detroit in 99. Before we talk about the move to Detroit, you write that playing in Montreal probably comes with the most pressure. Why is that?
Well, being in a Canadian city, the history of the Montreal Canadiens, their winning traditions, you know, you got guys like Rocket Richard, Guy Lafleur, Bob Gainey, mentioning the guys I play, you know, you're playing with them or they're in the building, and, you know, you can't help but put that added pressure on yourself about being successful and winning. So it was like, I always said it, I was like getting a Harvard degree when I broke in with Montreal. I learned from the best that ever played the game, and it kind of, you know, throughout the course of my career, you know, I used that when I got traded to Chicago as far as leadership. And then, you know, of course, to Detroit, having Steve Yzerman as a captain, you know, he ran the team. It was his team. And when he spoke, he wasn't often, but when he said something, it sure meant a lot. So, like I said, I'm real fortunate to be surrounded by the players, Nick Lidstrom's, the veterans that I ended up with here in Detroit.
You know, you write that when the trade happened and you were traded, you know, you came to Detroit from Chicago, you had been the enemy, but things had changed in Chicago. You talked about the fact that Dirk Graham came in announcing he didn't want your kids in the dressing room, and you tell us you spent most of that 98-99 season, in your words, begging Graham to explain why he was treating me like a leper. And then you read in the paper where the GM says your contract would be your last contract. How is that as a feeling inside? Did you consider hanging it up and calling it a career at that point?
No, honestly, I knew I had some hockey left in me. Obviously, I felt the way things were going that I couldn't carry the load like I did, getting into my age, getting a little older. At the time, you don't understand it. There's ways to do business and other ways. I have no ill feelings now towards any of those people that at the time were responsible for, you know, what happened. And Dirk Graham, I still consider a friend, a great teammate, great leader. But like I said, the book was a way of getting it off my chest to explain to some of the fans in Chicago. I felt like they were, you know, directly when they said that about the kids, it was targeted towards me, and the writing was on the wall that it was time for me to go. But I just didn't feel, you know, I didn't feel it was that time to retire. So it all worked out well, obviously, coming to Detroit. And they did me Mr. Wirtz did me a huge favor by sending me to Detroit. He didn't have to do that. And like I said, it couldn't have worked out any better.
And we all know in Detroit you had said it once, and you talk about this in your book, Chris Childers, that you had said in an interview you would never play for the Red Wings. And then, oh boy, the Red Wings wanted you. Talk to us about what it was like walking into Detroit's dressing room that first time.
Well, the word that comes to mind is comical. some of the looks, mostly like disbelief, like, seeing me, you know, put on the jersey before warm-ups, and it had to look odd to them because when I went in to look at the mirror, to look at myself before I went out, just to splash water on my hair and face, it didn't look right at all. But I got lucky. We were on such a good team. You know, I came in. Scotty put me in a situation where I couldn't fail on the ice, and I thank him for that. He put me in every situation to succeed. And, you know, we went into the end of the season winning 13 in a row, losing to Colorado in the playoffs. But like I said, I couldn't have been luckier for the fans to accept me after what had gone on the past 8 years before, all the hate for Chicago and myself. So real lucky, that's for sure. And then make Detroit my home now.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think that you know you're part of the Red Wings front office. Your sons are skating from Michigan State. Shelley's Chili is part of the downtown scene. Although I did hear from listeners on Facebook who are so sorry it closed in Dearborn. They love the Dearborn location. I'll just throw that in there. But why did you stay in Michigan? Did you surprise yourself by not heading back to Chicago?
In all honesty, it was a family decision. I had kids in high school, like you mentioned, kids in college. It was for the kids. I love Chicago. I'm there quite a bit. My parents are still there. So, you know, a couple times my parents have had some scares health-wise, and it's really hard. As close as Chicago is to Detroit, it's not the same as being there for them. So I found it real difficult to commute when they needed to get to the hospital, or someone being the oldest son, they'd only listen to me to go to the hospital. So that was the biggest issue. Like I said, the kids, now they're all graduated, we're empty nested, but I couldn't be happier working for the Oilers and the Detroit Red Wings and Kenny. I'm in a great situation, and I've always appreciated what they've done for me. So right now I'm very content in Michigan and traveling back and forth to Grand Rapids and Chicago occasionally.
I'm talking with Hall of Famer Chris Chelios about his book, Made in America. And Chris, we saw you hoisting the Stanley Cup, actually, in 2002 at the Joe. I was there that night watching that happen, and it was a magical night. Happened again in 2008, and you'd already won the Cup with Montreal in 86. Can you give us a feeling of what it is like to take that victory lap around the ice after you've battled so hard and finally won the Cup?
Well, there's no bigger stage, and I won it my second year, and said, "Geez, this is easy. I'm gonna pile up a whole lot of rings here." And then 17 years later, 2002, I think it was the biggest spread between someone winning a cup. Winning it at home was unreal. In Montreal, we won it in Calgary. Not to take anything away, winning a cup in Montreal, I don't think there's any bigger event. Having over a million people at the parade and going down St. Catherine, but winning it at home, having kids old enough to understand it, sharing with my family, which I didn't do the first time because I had no kids. There's nothing like winning a championship at any level, but when you're in the NHL and you're that level and sharing it with the fans and the city, and it's something special. Anybody will tell you when they won the cup, and being able to take the cup, you know, for a couple days and sharing that with your friends, it's a great tradition.
What's your favorite taking the cup somewhere story?
You know, I guess not to name drop, but when I took it out to Malibu, just because I felt like I'd been out there for, you know, 17 years, and I, you know, built enough friendships and friends out there, I had a party, basically an open party on the beach, and every time I turned around, it was a different celebrity who I didn't invite. They just happened to hear that the Stanley Cup was down on the beach, and they wanted to go see it and get a picture with it. So, you know, when Sylvester Stallone shows up to your party, you know it's a good one. So, you know, at Tom Hanks and the guy Meathead, Rob Reiner from All in the Family. So, like I said, that was a special moment. Drapes came out, Cleary, Puddler, a couple other guys made it out there. It was Darren McCarty. So that sticks out in my mind, Wayne Gretzky. It was a really great day for a lot of people.
I think a lot of folks would have liked to have been at that party, Chris. You know, speaking of McCarty, it brings to mind some of the legendary NHL fighters, Probert, Joey Koser, Ty Domi. The game has really changed from when you started. Do you think hockey's gotten a little too gentrified as the NHL cleaned it up and eliminated most of the fights?
Well, whether it's gentrified, that's a great word. But they're obviously, I think the goal ultimately is to protect the players. That's why I think fighting's under the microscope. If you think about it, it is still the only pro sport that allows fighting. Kind of barbaric, but I think when you have a stick in your hands, the best way to settle it is to drop the gloves. I still think the reason why guys are getting hurt in fights now is just the players are so big and strong and fast and, you know, training and whatever it is they're eating, the stuff they're putting in the food. But it's ultimately a plan to protect the players, which I'm in favor of. But I still think it's a big part of the game from a fan's perspective. You know, everybody's out of their chair when there's a fight. There's times to fight. There's, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, you know, you fought for a reason. The guys that were supposed to fight, the guys, there was a code of respect. And I think now the players are losing that. And I think the problem is the guys in the suits that are running in the league, they shouldn't be making these decisions. It should be the players.
I have to say, I loved your quote. You said when you walked into that Wings dressing room the first time, Darren McCarty picked up your stick and said, "This is the first time I've ever been this close to one of these without it being broken over my head." It was a good line.
Yeah, well, like I said, Mac, I was always aware he was on the ice. I went after Sergey and Stevie quite a bit. So when I did that, I knew who was coming. It was either Mac or Proby. So like I said, there's a mutual respect, and he was a great teammate, Mac. And I'm sure the people in he's so well-loved in Detroit for what he did and how he was such a hard-nosed, you know, pail. He took his, you know, lunch pail to work, and he worked and fought and scored some big goals.
Boy, you're right about that. We actually talked with him when his book came out, and it was a great conversation. How did it feel when you read the words from Mike Babcock that said you are, Chris Chelios, is the greatest American player of all time? How'd that feel?
Well, honestly, I didn't even notice it until my daughter mentioned it to me, because I haven't read the whole book, kind of nervous, and my wife hasn't read it either. She's afraid to see what's in there. But like I said, I only wish I could have had Babs when I was a younger player and a marquee guy. At the end, it was kind of a transition time for me. At first, I was the guy to bring along the young guys, but I still thought, and that's just the competitiveness in me, I thought I could do more to help the team. And when we were winning, I had nothing to say. When we were losing, I thought, you know, I could help on the power play. I did it my whole career. But, you know, we had guys like Rafalski, and we had guys that were so good at the time. You know, I couldn't justify, you know, fitting into those slots. And when I did get the opportunity with Babs, I got hurt, broke my leg twice, and things didn't go well for me. And then at the end, like I said, no bitterness. It's just an old athlete going down, and I think I went down with, you know, dignity and a player's respect. So it all worked out great. I think I frustrated him like hell because I was the worst practice player in the world, and it drove him nuts because he was so much about structure and accountability. But no question, yeah, great coach for the Wings.
Yeah, yeah, and you seem to click very well with Scotty Bowman.
Yeah, I caught him at the right time too. I think I might have run into him early in my career. Stories I hear from, you know, Larry Robinson and Bob Gainey and those guys that played from in the 70s. He was a tough cookie. When I got to him, you know, he had a veteran team. He loved his veterans. He was hard on the young guys. And I really enjoyed playing for Scott. He was never a dull moment. A lot of laughs, whether he knew we were laughing or not. So it was good.
You know, I look at someone like Yzerman, who's now general manager. Do you see yourself, you know, where do you see yourself going with hockey? You're part of the Red Wings front office. You're working with Ken Holland. Do you see yourself ever coaching or higher in management?
You know, I did the front office thing for 2 years, working under two of the best in Jim Nill and Kenny Holland. And I just thought I wanted to try something different, you know, wearing a suit every day and then having to go in an office and critique the players. You know, and I wasn't separated enough from the team, my teammates, to go in there and tell them, this guy's had a bad game, this guy shouldn't be in the lineup. And I was really uncomfortable, you know, feeling like I was still part of the team and actually still feeling like I was a player. So I went to, you know, developing players, going to Grand Rapids, learning how to coach under Jeff Lashill. And I've been doing that for 2 or 3 years. So right now it seems like if I was to take a full-time job, I think coaching would be the way I'd go. It just seems like you're so in touch with the players and you're in the room, you're on the ice. And I really enjoy teaching the young guys and not having to, you know, decide their fate, you know, of their careers.
The book is Made in America by Chris Chelios with USA Today's Kevin Allen. And Chris Chelios will be signing his book Tuesday night at Barnes & Noble on Washtenaw in Ann Arbor from 7 to 9 p.m. And by the way, if you're at the Joe Friday night, he will be signing from 6 to 7:30 at Section 104. Chris Chelios, it was a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you very much.